Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When this happened, you talked about it on The Fan.
21 of the last 22 times they scored. Here's Sims to throw on third down. Up the middle, touchdown, Bavaro. Mark Bavaro goes to one knee. Genuflex in prayer as a 13-yard throw over the middle answers the prayer for the Giants fan.
When New York sports happens, talk about it here. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
McMonagle here with you on The Fan. I can't stand where I'm sitting. The microphone where I normally sit in the power chair. You're always lovely. The mic is not working. So I have to sit where Evan normally sits. And my perspective, my point of view, where I push the on button, where the computer is, like everything. I'm completely out of sorts. I don't know why it affects me this much. I have a newfound respect for the Mike Mussinas and Gerrit Coles of the world. I do, because I am totally out of sorts sitting in literally 2.5 feet to my right, as I normally do. But that's the way it is. Let's get to a talking point here that has nothing to do with the game, nothing to do with why the Yankees lost this game, and there's tons of reasons why, namely Cole and Judge. Excuse me. Rodon and Judge. They're the reasons why it wasn't more comfortable win number one. Loss number one in game two belonged to Rodon and Judge. But let's get to the broadcast for a second, because I don't normally care. And I don't normally say this. And it's not like I turned the game off. And I still, thankfully, have never turned on or turned off a game based on the broadcast team. So I'm still there. But TBS is having the worst possible series you could ever freaking have as a broadcast. Not just them. Not just Bob Costas and Ron Darling. It's the camera angles. It's the showing behind the catcher. It's lowering the crowd noise. You can obviously tell. I wasn't paying attention to it the first time. This time I wanted to hear if I could hear it. You can clearly hear after big moments. They lower it so Bob can be heard talking about God knows what. My God. I genuinely love the guy. I love Bob Costas. Always have. I mean, you know, Carrasco contends that a fan in right field. He's been a part of Yankee World Series. Like, Bob Costas is Bob Costas. And it's not even that he's bad at describing the plays. Like, he just doesn't stop talking. I don't know if I've ever heard a broadcast where the play-by-play guy does not allow a moment of breath. He's not one, even for a radio broadcast, this would be a lot of talking. A television broadcast where pictures are doing half of his job, he's still going on and on, and it's not even, I don't even care, like so many Yankee fans, oh, he clearly hates the Yankees. I don't even care about that. He was going on and on talking about how great a player Judge is for 10 straight minutes during a huge at-bat in the game. And I'm like, Bob, we don't need to know right now that he stacks up with Mickey Mantle. Like, I don't care about Joe DiMaggio right now. You know where the question is, where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? Clearly in the mind and the forefront of Bob Costas' brain. That's where he's living, because I had to hear about Joe DiMaggio. I mean, and then you get to the George Brett thing. But the particular nonstop in a big moment, like they're going to cut to George Brett in the downtime and we got to hear about George Brett, fine. It's too much, don't get me wrong. But the game is on the line with Aaron Judge up. And we're hearing about The season, greatest right-handed season we've ever seen from a right-handed hitter. You have to go back to Honus Wagner, like on and on and on and on. Like Hall of Fame career, not even just a Hall of Fame career, one of the special few historic. Like, I get it. Can we focus on this at bat that could decide the game, Bob? Like, oh my God, he just never stops. And then, yeah, the George Brett thing, but I don't even get hung up. I don't think Bob Costas hates the Yankees or wants them to lose. That's almost every single national broadcaster, every fan thinks he hates. He's out to get their team. Like, the one thing I'll say, if I was a Kansas City Royal fan, I don't know how I'd feel about him. And when Bobby Witt Jr. makes that great play to double up Stanton, completely focused on Stanton can't run, and literally says, well, it's not Stanton's fault. Like, during the play-by-play of that double play, he goes, and here we go, what we talked about. Ground ball from Stanton. Hey, look, and it's not his fault. Like, okay. Okay, thanks, Bob. I'm sorry. It is an impossible broadcast. And I'm not out to knock Bob Costas. He's been, you know, may I have a skosh of his career. But man, oh man, he just doesn't stop talking. I've never experienced anything like it.
Stop talking.
Yeah, there you go. That is Al, and he's 100% right. Bob Costas did not stop. And then the jokes and the like Bob, he does a read for a promo or something, and it ended like today or tomorrow. And he's got a joke of, oh, you better get out there fast before it ends tomorrow. I mean, like, what kind of reads are you giving me, huh? Just stop. If you weren't always talking, I might get a kick out of that. I mean, and some of the other, like, he makes these jokes and you feel like Ron Darling gives it the like when he was talking about Penguin, he has to comment on all the promos. I mean, for my generation, Burgess Meredith has always been Penguin. I had to deal with I had a hard enough time dealing with Danny DeVito as a Penguin. Now I have to deal with Colin Farrell. It's all too much. And you know, this obscure player from the 1970s, his nickname was the Penguin. And then Ron Darling has to go, haha, that's right. Like, no one cares. Please. Stop! There's enough going on. These games are intense. If this was seven, if that inning really got out of control and it's Kansas City 9-1, okay. Oh my God, I hate to kill him, but man, oh man, it's impossible. The broadcast is dreadful. It's hard to listen to. It's hard to listen. I was in this very studio watching it. The TV lights didn't go off until 8:30. I felt like I was, you know, getting the third degree. I was trying to figure out where I was on the night of the 17th while I'm watching this game. Like, it was just tough. Let's go to Mike in Miami. What's up, Mike?
Yeah, I wanted to agree with about the Jazz Chisholm. I mean, that's something that kids would say, like in a schoolyard, you know, growing up. Oh, you got lucky.
Yeah.
You don't say that to professionals that have dedicated their lives.
I think he just meant that they hit the ball, because he mentioned it earlier in the press conference that they had a bunch of balls hit hard but right at people. I think he just meant that, you know, I don't think he meant that Kansas City's not good and they got lucky, but it's going to be perceived that way and it's going to come out that way, and you just can't say they got lucky off of a loss. Shows no accountability. It shows no, hey, you know, we've got to be better. It's like, yeah, listen, we did really great. They got lucky.
Right, because when he was in Miami,
yeah,
he came out, you know, with real thick gold chains and he would argue balls and strikes. He definitely has a maturity problem, and I think that's what it is.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't care about the gold chains. A lot of guys, Verdugo wears chains. A lot of guys wear chains. I just think that, like, they needed a bit of a spark, and they probably need a little bit of what Verdugo, Jazz Chisholm brings attitude-wise. I think they probably could benefit from it, and I think they have. And I think they, you know, could use a little swagger. But you can't be calling teams lucky when they came in and beat you fair and square. I mean, this game wasn't about luck. That's a silly thing to say. They're lucky. I mean, you could argue they're lucky they're not down 0-2 right now. You could argue that. I think he should have been out at second base. Now, again, that wasn't, they weren't losing at that point. Everyone talked, oh, they shouldn't have won the game. He shouldn't have been there. Yeah, that's the winning run. They're still tied at home with a better bullpen. So it's not like they would have lost necessarily game one if that play was called correctly, but I do believe they got a break. But I do agree with him in his comments about balls being hit hard right at people. I don't think there's any doubt. There were. But that's baseball. I'm not trying to make excuses, but there were. Birdie has two. Glaber has one. Volpe has one. I think even Chisholm hit one to center field. That was pretty hard, but they have theirs in that third inning. Pascantino hits one right at Soto, an absolute bullet. That would have broken the game open. That would have got them two runs in that inning if that ball's down the line a little bit more. I mean, that's how it goes. But I just, the only reason why I bring up the hard ground balls is because I was getting bombarded with people on Twitter, and I know I saw a bunch of people say it. I even saw Moose, who did a good job. He does these from the car videos, whatever. Moose does a good job. And he used the term lifeless and dead. I watched that game last night. I know it's an easy thing to say when you don't score runs that a team looks lifeless. I don't think the Yankees were lifeless last night. I really don't think at all. I think there was a lot of good at bats. I really do. I think they worked a lot of walks. I think they had good at bats. I'm looking at the box score right now. Birdie has two hard line drives. Volpe has one. Torres has one to third. Volpe comes the home run and the base hit in the ninth. Verdugo going the other way to start the seventh. That hopefully should have been a rally. That's another, like, that's a killer for me in this game, without question, is the birdie line drive to right field in the seventh inning, where you know if you can get, and this is where the top of the order's got to be better too, and that's what you're hoping for. If you can get the bottom of the order on and have the lineup turn over to the top, that's where you're looking to do damage. And in the seventh inning, Verdugo starts it with that opposite field base hit, and then birdie takes an outside fastball and absolutely laces it to right field. Absolutely laces it. And it gets caught on the warning track, and then Torres strikes out and Soto flies to right. But if that ball lands and you have second and third, now the Yankees have an inning with the top of the order coming up. Now the Yankees have an inning. And Bubik is like on the ropes there. Instead, that ball's caught, and that was the end of that rally. Peter in Manhattan. What's up, Pete?
How you doing, Chris? Great show. And again, once in a while I have to remind you, my favorite sports host. So that's Chris. You don't care about the Penguin Ron saying? It's pretty funny. But anyway, Chris.
No, I don't care. I don't care about the Penguin in that moment. No, if I'm ever lucky enough to interview Bob Costas and we have 20 minutes and he wants to tell me a funny anecdote about him, I'm all ears. But while I'm literally, you know, hanging, I'm living and dying with this Yankee game, I don't need jokes about the Penguin, I have to admit.
Chris, just a few comments. Number one, with the Yankees, I mean, you talked about their offense. I mean, listen, they got 14 runners on base on walks. I mean, you know, I think they're lucky there. I mean, if that stops, the Yankees are going to have, you know, they could have potential offensive problems, even more.
Well, they have, I understand that they have to throw it into the strike zone, but you know what? Maybe some of those walks would be hits if the opposing pitching threw it into the strike zone. Like, you have to work walks. Like, not every one of them is just four balls in the dirt, take first base. They work them. Right. Like, I understand the point, Peter, and I'm not trying to say, like, when you have a rally, and all you can in the first game, and they score a couple runs on bases loaded walks, it's nothing to hang your hat on and say, look at that great rally they had. I get it. It's walks. But at the same time, those at-bats are legitimate. Like, I feel like they're getting no credit for drawing these walks. Like, it's important to draw walks. Walks are a positive. Walks aren't a negative. Like, all of a sudden, because we hate the Yankees, walks are a negative. All of a sudden, because we're looking for any reason to kill this team, walks are a negative. Like, yeah, when your pitcher gives up your walk, you're pissed off that the pitcher threw. But, like, you know, a lot of these walks have been long at-bats. It's not just four balls in the dirt or four balls, you know, back to the backstop and they're given first base. You have to work those walks. The problem is you have to capitalize on them. Like I was having, you know, a discussion with someone about, you know, the walks or whatever. Like this is how, like the 90s Yankees. Now, I'm not trying to compare Reagans with Pedro Martinez, Curt Schilling, or Randy Johnson. But in any of those games that the Yankees won against those ace-type pitchers, even during the heyday, even during the 90s era, even during the late 90s dynasty era, they wouldn't always get to the starting pitcher. They would get them out of the game. And that's what they did in this game. Like, I'm comfortable with the first couple of innings of this game and getting Reagans out after four. That's a good job. I don't think that's lifeless. I think the Yankees came through in the first four innings. Reagans has got good stuff. Would you like to come through with that hit from Judge? Clearly, that's that at-bat I'm not comfortable with. But other than that, like, I get it. They get a bunch of walks. They get his pitch count up. They get an ace-type pitcher out of the who's going to finish second or third in the Cy Young Award voting. They get him out of the game in the fifth inning. In the fifth inning, they're throwing Zerpa out there. Like, that's a good job from this offense. The problem is then you got to capitalize against the middle of that bullpen, and that's where they really went dry in this game. That's the problem, but I honestly don't think they were lifeless. I thought they were good at bats throughout the entire game, just not the ones they needed, and not enough strung together. And that's why I got to hit the ball out of the ballpark. The Yankees got to hit home runs because it's not easy to string all these hits together. Let's get to Joey in Massapequa, as we will transition about halfway through the show here as we take you till 5 o'clock in the warm show. There is a Met game being played later today. Mets game 3 against Philadelphia with their ace on the mound going up against a very good pitcher for Philadelphia. And hopefully the Mets can continue their magic. Joey, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, how you doing, Chris? You think the Mets go win today? Big game today at the Citi Field. They go win it?
Joey. And thank you for the call. Do I think they're going to win it? I don't know. I think they have a very good chance to. I think they have a very good chance to win this series. Manaea against Nola, I mean, for their careers, it's a good pitching matchup, probably a little leaning towards Nola, but Manaea has been so good for them this year that you feel comfortable anytime he's on the mound. And just right now, it's like the opposite of the Yankees. Like, it's funny because you will hear that, you know, the Yankees, this is not how you win. This offense, that's not how you win postseason games. But the Mets can go just absolutely dormant for seven innings, and no one's complaining. Why? Because they show up in the big spot late in the games. I have never seen a team consistently come through the way the Mets have consistently come through over the last four or five games. It's crazy, even in losses. Let's be honest. The Yankees and the Mets and Vientos had absolutely zero business hitting that home run. Vientos had zero business. That's absolutely foolish. It's crazy. He had no business hitting that home run. That doesn't happen. That doesn't consistently happen. They are on a run like I have never seen in clutch hitting. I've never seen it. Now, particularly late in games, because there are opportunities early in the game, they don't come through. But late in the game, when their backs are up against the wall, I have never seen this consistent amount of home runs, too. I mean, like, Pete Alonso didn't just hit one in the gap and then you needed another base hit. Vientos doesn't just get a double and then you need another base hit. They're hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But here's what I like about the Mets series against Philadelphia. One main specific reason, because I think Philadelphia is an excellent team, probably a better team than the Mets. But here's the one reason I feel good about this series for the Mets. They have proven that there's nobody in that Philadelphia bullpen that can get them out. Like, they have touched up that bullpen twice. Their best relievers in big spots, the game on the line. Now, I know Diaz blew the game too, and that's an issue. But it didn't feel the same way. Especially on that Wheeler game where, like, that's how they win games. Wheeler shuts the other team down. They come in with that bullpen. They score just enough. That's how they've won games. And to buck that trend and to immediately just get to that bullpen and then do it again the second night. Like, I don't know if they have anywhere to go late in games. And if you get to the top of the order late in games, I don't know if they can get them out. And in these series, these bullpens are so important, and it comes down to these bullpen games. And even though you know, they've gotten touched up too, the Mets. But, you know, Buto has not been his best. He got touched up by Milwaukee. Maton had a bad outing, but Maton should be rest enough now. Stanek should be rest enough now. Buto should be rest enough now. Diaz is rest enough. Like, I just like, not necessarily that they're better pitchers. Right now, the confidence and the feeling as the Mets will come to the plate against the best relievers of Philadelphia feels different to me than vice versa. And the bullpens are so important in these short series that I like any matchup late in the game. Obviously what the Mets have done, but also, like, it just feels like this bullpen has nothing for them. They are very, very comfortable against this Philadelphia bullpen. And I just think they're resilient. Could they, you know, get shut down by Nolan and lose this game? Yeah, I mean, there's a good chance. There's a chance they don't make it back to Philadelphia. There's a chance the Mets lose the next two games. I mean, Philly's a really good team, but I just have a feeling they're too good for that. And if it comes down to bullpen games, I would, especially in Citi Field and in Queens, I definitely like the matchup better for the Mets. But, I mean, we'll see what the Mets do. It's going to be another great series. I think it's probably going five. I think the Yankees and Royals have a real chance to go five. I think there's a chance the Yankees win the next two games. I know it's going to go nuts. Everyone, oh, how could you say that, pom-pom waving loser? Because I honestly believe they're better, and I think the offense has it would be one thing if this offense was just dead. I don't think the offense is dead. And they came from behind three separate times in game one. No one wants to give them credit for it because a lot of it was based on walks. I get it. And it was without Judge. And they never had that one big hit that blew the game open, and they got lucky on a call. But three separate times in game one, they were down, and they came back. And yesterday, I thought they were good at bats up and down the lineup. They didn't come through with the big hit. And Judge has got to be better. And because this team's only going to go, it's really not hard or complicated. This team is only going to go as far as Judge takes them. It's really not complicated. And although I'll defend him over the long stretch or the idea that this is just him, don't expect anything because this is the kind of postseason player he is, I'll push back on that. I'll also push back on any idea of moving him in the lineup or benching him, God forbid. I mean, please. Call me up and tell me they should bench Judge. But at the same time, I can't disagree with the idea that this loss last night has a lot to do with Judge not coming through in the first inning and Soto not coming through after the first inning and Wells not coming through in this game and Stanton, even with an RBI single, hitting to that double play in the eighth. Like, they've got to figure out a way to get the big hit. And I really feel like once they get that first one, it'll open up the floodgates, because I don't really trust this Kansas City bullpen. If they could figure out a way to not get shut down in game three by Seth Lugo, I honestly think, the more I think about it, I actually like the pitching matchup better with Clark Schmidt, because I'm worried about the blow up, and I'm worried because we saw it all happen in one inning. Kansas City scored all their runs in one inning in this game. That's it. They scored four runs in the fourth. That's it. I'm worried about that one inning where if they went to Luis Gil, he doesn't have it and he walks two, three guys in an inning, and then all it takes is one double and they're down three runs. Where I know Clark Schmidt's going to throw strikes. I know Clark Schmidt's going to give you six innings of two or three runs. Like, that's typically what Clark Schmidt does. And against this particular lineup, and I know they scored four runs and came through and beat the Yankees last night, but they don't scare me. They just don't. And so if I'm going to go up against them, I don't want to give them anything, and Luis Gil might have a tendency to give them something. So under a different team, like if they were playing a hot Orioles team or they were playing a hot Astros team with a lineup that scares me, with a lineup with Altuve and Tucker and Alvarez, I might opt for the pitcher who I think could go seven innings of two-hit baseball and completely shut down a lineup, because that's Luis Gil. If you would have told if Luis Gil or Clark Schmidt pitch and you told me who's the pitcher of those two who went seven innings, one-run baseball with 10 strikeouts and completely shut down the opposition, that's Luis Gil. And if you would have told me who's the pitcher who got knocked out in the second inning and gave up five runs, I would tell you that's Luis Hill. I want to avoid the latter because this lineup doesn't scare me enough to think, oh man, if I pitch, you know, a pitcher without the great dynamic stuff, if I throw out a Clark Schmidt out there who, you know, relies on movement and relies on, you know, spotting his fastball and relies on, you know, getting pitching the contact a little bit more, you know, that scares me against Tucker and Alvarez and, you know, or Gunnar Henderson. And like, that scares me with that long length lineup, Santander and all the different guys that are with that Baltimore team. Like, then throw the guy who I think can dominate against this lineup. Just give me a good performance. And the Yankees offense has got to carry them. 888-808-1019. Mick Monagle here with you on The Fan. We'll continue to take your phone calls all the way to 5 o'clock in the warm-up show right here on The Fan.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Start some trouble and call The Fan, 888-808-1019, powered by Paramount Plus. Stream the NFL on CBS, live on Paramount Plus.
All right, 336, McMonagle here with you on The Fan as we try and come to terms with the Yankee season coming to an end. It was a fun go of it. Actually, no, it wasn't. It was miserable every second. I hated this entire season. I hate this team. You can't even look at them anymore. What's the point? Cancel the whole damn thing. What are we even worried about? Let the Mets have Juan Soto. Who cares? Let him go somewhere where he has a chance to win. Fly. Be free, Juan Soto. Escape from this disaster that is this Yankee team after one playoff loss. It's what an unfortunate. I thought you had to, you know, lose a series to be eliminated. Turns out, all you had to do was lose one game. I didn't know. And I'm really bummed about it because I could have sworn this team had a real chance. But, I mean, Judge 1-for-7 so far in the series, and ultimately that was their demise. Where's the Yankee elimination shirt? No? They haven't been eliminated yet? You sure, Eddie? Could have sworn they were eliminated last night. It's the vibe. I feel like it was, but Eddie's telling me no. That amazingly enough, there's still going to be a game tomorrow.
Till the steak through the heart.
I'll have to wait. This is just an appetizer. This isn't enough of a steak through the heart moment for me.
No, this means nothing.
Oh, okay. Is it coming? Just do me a favor. Is it coming in this series or is it down the line?
I never will assume anything.
Oh, okay.
I have to see the vampire with the stake through the heart.
Oh, I get you. Yeah. Well, I'm just saying the Yankee fans already, they're willing to hand you the stake. They're wearing garlic and they're prepared. So at any moment, just step on in and end it for us. Let us know.
No. As an outsider, I'm a realist.
Oh, you're a realist. And what is the realist in you tell you about this Yankee series?
That any of the remaining 8 teams could be right. The World Series champion.
I totally agree with you. I totally agree with you. Anyone could. And we talked about that with this year. And that's why, you know, the Yankees have to be the team that makes it to the World Series in the American League because there is no Astros here. And even if the Astros were here, they weren't the Astros of championship elk. Ilk. I would say elk. Ilk. And they're the best team. And if you go back, show me the series where the Yankees lost to a team that you can clearly say they were better than. It's a long time. This group hasn't. They've never been that. They've never had the best record in the American League heading into the postseason. They've never had, obviously, home field advantage throughout into the season. They've always had a team like the Astros hanging over their heads who were far better. Or I shouldn't say far better, but better. And who played well against them. When they've played teams they're better than, they've won. And this is that situation. And they're going to have to find a way to win. It's one loss. It was frustrating. There's a myriad of things to point to. I understand it's a carryover from previous seasons. It's the same thing we talked about. I said it going in. What's my biggest fear? That they don't hit with runners in the scoring position. It's always going to be this biggest fear until they don't. Until they actually do it. They put plenty of guys in runners in scoring position. They're not just dead, but the offense has to show up. And Aaron Judge has to show up. But the idea that Judge can't show up, the idea that that's already a foregone conclusion, that he is someone who cannot hit in the postseason and will never see it, is idiotic. It's idiotic. 888-808-1019. Bridget in Reddington. What's up, Bridget?
Hey. I guess I'm going to have to bring my crucifix, my garlic, and my Brian Cashman shirt.
Do something, You got a Brian Cashman shirt? Yeah. Listen, if they made Brian Cashman shirts, I would have bought one by now.
Well, funny enough, so I think it was Keith that was talking about Cashman and how he constructs the lineup and meets with the analyst team.
Mm-hmm.
Go over who and what they value. And that being exit velo being one of the highly touted. Well, they're hitting the ball hard.
Yeah.
But two people. Maybe they need to mix in some of the people with the, you know.
Low exit velocity?
That, can do a bloop and a blast.
Bridget, I think I understand your point, but here's the thing. I don't know about Brian Cashman and the analytic team and the guys who huddle in a room, but I can tell you this. My father, screaming from the sidelines when I was 8 years old, when I knew nothing about baseball, said, "Hey, Chris, hit it hard." I mean, that doesn't take analytics, Bridget. That's not something that's a new age baseball trend.
Your father also probably said, "Hit them where they ain't."
Yeah, hit it where they ain't, exactly. Since they've been playing baseball, the concept is to hit the ball hard. This is the one part that I've never understood a complaint with. The idea that people get mad when teams focus on or talk about or broadcast talk about exit velocity and say it's meaningless. It's just ridiculous to say how hard someone hits the ball is meaningless. It's not meaningless. The harder you hit it, the more likely it gets through the infield. The more likely it gets over someone's head. Hitting the ball hard is the purpose. So no, I do not want to add more players who don't hit the ball hard. Now, would you want to have guys with different skill sets? That's a different thing. But the idea that they should coach out or not worry about or look to move on from guys who hit the ball hard, that one I can't agree with. I want as many guys who hit the ball hard as humanly possible. I want a team full of guys who hit the hell out of the baseball. I don't know why you wouldn't. Now, at the expense of swinging at, you know, full speed with two strikes and no two-strike approach. That's all the different stuff you can get into. But, yeah, no, I like guys who hit the ball hard. And I do think it's worth noting. And I do think when you're developing young players, you're looking for guys who hit the ball hard. And that's been some of the and you know what? It's funny, too, because I wanted to say this. It actually, I found a comparison to my son's soccer team to Major League Baseball. And I guess specifically the New York Yankees. Because there's been a lot of talk about how the Yankees fundamentally aren't good or whatever. And, you know, in some aspects it's definitely true. But there's also been a discussion about how they bring up their prospects and how they train their farmhands. And there was that one disgruntled farmhand who says they don't value hitting, right? Or they don't value getting base hits. They don't value the bloop over the first baseman's head. They'll call that luck, and they won't give you credit when they're counting up good at bats. That would be considered a bad at bat if you hit the ball 30 miles an hour, but it just, you know, went right over the drawn in infield's head or something, and it helped you get a runner to third, and so they're not valuing winning baseball. And I was thinking about this, and I don't know how, well, you know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it necessarily right now, but My son plays soccer, right? And he's got a coach who specifically has, and I know you're going to laugh because I'm using seven-year-olds, but he has a coach who has the practice indoors and practices pretty much indoor soccer. And they work on the fundamentals and they work on, you know, dribbling, controlling the ball and all this stuff. And then they play on Saturdays out on grass. And I watch other teams just focus on kicking the ball towards the goal, running fast, trying to get it anywhere near the net, kicking it in, all running together, all bunched up, just, and my son's team is losing. He's losing the games. But as I watch his team compared to other teams, they are much better at controlling the ball. They are much better at working on spacing. They are much better at becoming better soccer players. It's costing them in the moment. They're losing to guys who are focused on, okay, just kick the ball forward. No, don't try and control it. Just get it in the other zone. Because there's such chaos from seven-year-olds that as long as we get it near the net, maybe we'll put it in. And my son's team isn't winning, but they're developing better soccer players. So when I hear about a disgruntled guy talking about that kind of thing, yeah. When I'm building a baseball player, do I want him to get a ball off the handle and bloop it? Or do I want him to hit the ball hard? Am I trying to win minor league baseball games? Or am I trying to develop good hitters? Now, I'm sure there's a fine line because you need situational hitting and you need to understand how to win baseball games, and bloop hits win you baseball games sometimes. But when you're developing hitters, it's about having good at-bats, and it's about hitting the ball hard. That might upset a lot of people, but it's true. Maria in West Haven. What's up, Maria? How are you?
Good, thank you. Yourself?
I'm doing as good as I can be, taking calls about benching Judge and moving him down in the order. So I'm doing as well as I can be off of a loss.
I'm calling about two things. I agree with you on Bob Costas.
Yes.
I know he's a very intelligent man and he knows everything about sports, but I agree. But if you listen to other baseball games, you know, from this playoff, the other guys are just as bad. They talk through everything. They don't shut up.
I've watched every inning of every Met game, and I haven't noticed it as much with that broadcast booth. They talk a lot, and listen, anytime, if you're a diehard Met fan or you're a diehard Yankee fan and you're used to your broadcast team that know your team and you know your team inside, especially if you're a Met fan and, you know, there's such a connection between the fan base and Ron, Keith, and Gary, hard to listen to any national broadcast or any other guys. They don't know your team as well. They'll say things that you're like, that's not entirely true. I wouldn't say that at all. But they look at numbers and they'll make a judgment, or they'll in recent history and everything. And so there's definitely times, and thank you for the call, Maria, where you feel like they don't know what they're talking about, or maybe they talk too much and they try to involve a three-person team and they're trying to get everybody involved, and it can feel forced at sometimes. Like, I get that. And while listening to other broadcasts, yeah, they're never as good as your guys, and they might talk a little bit too much. I'm sorry, but there was a Judge at bat in this game, and really the whole game, that Bob Costas never stops talking. And about this, like, he was going on and on about Judge's season and where Judge stands in the context of the history of baseball. Like, it was just unneeded. It was unneeded. And it never stopped. And it was off a pro. Like, he has to make jokes off of every promo. Bob, it's not about you, man. I love you, but it's not about you. Let the game breathe. Can we watch the game? I feel like I hardly heard Ron Darling. I was like, you know, I barely heard Ron Darling.
Imagine him going from Gary and Keith.
I know. Oh, my God. Stuart in Brooklyn. What's up, Stu?
Yeah, you're right.
I'm always right, Stu.
I know that, Chris. Chris, the number 99, he's asleep. What's going on with that? I mean, we're not hitting the ball. We get one hit. We don't drive runners in. We strike out. And Carlos Rodon, like I said to you before, I don't trust him.
Yeah, I mean, that's the question, Stu. I mean, that's the question. And now moving forward, because look, there's nothing, there's the two culprits in this game, the two main culprits, and thank you for the call, I got a break. The two main culprits in this game are Judge and Rodon. One of them, there's nothing to do. There's nothing to do. I'm sorry, there's absolutely nothing to do with Aaron Judge. You hit him third, and you hope he performs. And if he doesn't and they lose, that's it. He's got to perform or they're going to lose. Rodon is the question mark here. And I got to admit, Rodon kind of fooled me twice in all of this. One, he pitched, if you take away five starts in the middle of the year where he was god-awful and just got blown up in the first couple of innings in like five consecutive starts. Other than that, Carlos Rodon this year has been really good. And at the start of this game, and I know we haven't talked a lot about it, but here's the positive. There's like positive and negative to that first inning for me. And now you look back, and he looks like a fool. He looks like a fool. And I didn't need the third one with the tongue out after he struck out Pasquantino to end the first inning. You know, he's literally laughing, running off the mound, sticking his tongue out like, you know, the cat that swallowed the canary. I didn't need that one. But I got to tell you, for a guy who there's been so much talk about too big for the moment, and he can't handle the moment, and any bit of adversity in the big game, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of fear, and, you know, even, you know, his wife's got involved in some ways. And I saw her put out tweets of people just sending disgusting messages to her Instagram page and her foundation's page. Like, people are sick. It's a baseball game, man. But, like, all the talk around it, I got to tell you, he hyped me up. I was all about it. I don't know how anybody else felt watching the game. When he struck out Bobby Witt Jr. on a 98-mile-an-hour fastball up in the zone, and he turned around and said, "Woo-hoo-hoo-hoo-hoo! Oh, let's go, boys!" Like, he was ready to take on the world. I was hyped up. It got me going, and I thought it's exactly what he needed. I thought, you know what, lean into it, forget it. Did you go a bit too much in the next at-bat with the tongue out and laughing? Yeah, probably. But you know what? Screw it. Go get it. Go be you. I didn't think, a lot of people are calling it fake and forced. I didn't think it was fake or forced at all. I thought that was him in that moment, hyped up after having a miserable injury-plagued year last year and not getting a chance to play in the postseason, after bouncing back and having a pretty damn good year, being a game two starter, and going out there with all the question marks about what kind of pitcher he is and how he can handle the moment. I thought that first inning was exactly what he needed, and it got me freaking hyped. And now what sucks most about this performance is not only does his performance cost them a loss, and now they head to Kansas City down one, tied 1-1, but it ruins that moment. And it makes it feel like that he was, now it's a joke. Now we laugh at him. Now we say, you fool. It was one inning and you acted like that? How embarrassing. And they're not wrong. That comment and that line of thought isn't wrong. And that's what sucks. And now, not only that, but now you have a real question mark about who to pitch in Game 5. I don't think there's any doubt. If they make it past this series, I have no problem going back to him. You have to. And he's been really good this year. And I think he'll bounce back and be okay in his next start. I don't think he's doomed to be a poor postseason performer every step of the way here if they're lucky enough to have more steps. But Game 5, in a winner-take-all, with this pitching matchup, and you know Reagans is going to be better than he was in this game, I don't know if you start him in Game 5. I don't know. I don't know if you can. And I'll tell you what, I was in the afternoon with Tiki and Evan today for a brief moment, and Tiki suggested something, and I dismissed it. And now I'm not so sure. If you have Luis Gil available, if the Yankees win Game 3, if Clark Schmidt wins Game 3, it's not crazy. It's not crazy to throw Luis Gil in Game 4. And if you do that, it does two two things. One, it gives you an opportunity to now start Gerrit Cole in game one of the ALCS if you win game four. But it also saves Cole. Now, again, Cole's such a guy of you know, needing his normal routine that it scares me after that long layoff, and that's part of the reason why I think he pitched poorly in game one, to now pitch him and give him another day off, or pitch him now with the day off between four and five, it would be 2 days, right? So it wouldn't be on his fifth day, it'd be on his seventh day. That scares me. But I don't know if I can go back to Rodon in a game five. And if I win game three, if the Yankees win game three with Clark Schmidt on the mound, it's not crazy to take my chance with winning it with Luis Gil in game four and having Cole, you know, off a long layoff, unfortunately, but ready to go for game one of the ALCS. And then if I lose game four, having him for a game five as opposed to Carlos Rodon and piggybacked by Luis Gil and the bullpen. I don't know if I can go back to him for game five. Game two of the next series, if they get through, absolutely. I have no problem going back to him and seeing what he can do in a game two situation. But against this same team, his first start after this one, in the same building, with the same pressures, even more so because it'll obviously be a win or die kind of game, I don't know if I can go back to Rodon in that spot. So now that I feel that way, the idea of pushing back Cole to game five if they win game three, because obviously if they lose game three, you got to throw Cole game four, make sure you don't get eliminated in game four, and that you send it back to Yankee Stadium. But if you win game three, and now that you haven't pitched Luis Gil, the guy everybody thought was going to get the game three start, could you throw him in game four and push back Cole, save him for game five if needed, or game one of the ALCS if you're lucky enough to win game four? I dismissed it when Tiki said it to me today. But now, after watching Rodon in this start and having the feeling in the pit of my stomach at the thought of him in a game five versus Reagans, it's not the craziest thing. Because I don't think you can start him in this game. And I'm not someone who's lost complete faith in him. I'm right back with him in the ALCS. Right back with him. I'm not taking him out of the rotation. He's getting another start. He's been that good. We see what his dominance can be in the first three innings. You saw what he could be if he just settles in. I go back to him in the ALCS, but I don't know if I could pitch him again in this series. And if I feel that way, then maybe it is the best thing to do, save Cole, even if it would be on a now seven-day rest, which scares the hell out of me. 888-808-1019. We'll take your phone calls on that thought. But yeah, now I'm thinking about it and what we saw and the way he folded under pressure there in that fourth inning and off of that exuberance. And, you know, you got to be able to control your emotions a little bit. And I know people are going to get on him, but I have to admit, in the moment, I loved it. In the moment, I loved it. From him, a guy who, like, I felt needed that. Now it's a laughing point. Now it's something you turn to and go, you idiot, the first inning. You wasted, I heard Pedro Martinez in the postgame wasting all that energy. I don't know about that, but you can't do that and then do what you did in the fourth inning. You can't, or you're going to get laughed at. And now there's a ton of pressure on him to perform, and a game five would scare the hell out of me because I know I'm getting a better Reagans in that second start. I just know it. 888-808-1019. McMonagle here with you. One more hour to go. Continue to take your Yankee phone calls. We will start to talk a little bit more. We did a little bit on the Mets, but we can do a little bit more as we get ready for 4 o'clock today as they will take on Philadelphia at home, Citi Field. If you're going to go to the game, if you have plans on going to the game, give me a call. We could talk about, I think, the atmosphere. And Keith was talking about the ticket prices, right? The ticket prices are through the roof. This is a hot ticket. This is the hot ticket right now. The Mets and all their excitement, as the Yankees were pretty much on the back burner for about 2 weeks. If you take into consideration they clinched in Seattle, you know, a week before the season ended, like, it had been a full 2 weeks of no important Yankee baseball. And while the Mets were fighting for their lives with heroics, right now the Mets are the bigger story, the more juice, and especially the opponent. I mean, Philadelphia and, you know, this team that they've, you know, battled with in the division, and Harper and all the names, and Castellanos and Schwarber. I mean, this is a big game and a big series and a huge swing game. Game three, with their best pitcher, Manaea, on the mound, should be a fun one. 888-808-1019.
Postseason baseball is here, and it is the absolute best time of the year. I'm Rob Bradford of Baseballs and Boring, and we're going to have you covered every step of the way with instant reactions from players and coaches and managers and fans and reporters and everybody else who is immersed in this awesomeness and all the craziness that comes with October baseball. So follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.